the wind. With Phil Corbett.
This is a rare wind episode where I am not narrating from my desk in the woods, but instead narrating from the dining room of a Wendy's, specifically the Wendy's in Fernley, Nevada, which is right off of Interstate 80 and is also a Dairy Queen and a pilot station. And I'm joined today by my good friend, bandmate, and wind contributor, Emily Pratt.
Hi.
We were in a band together for 6 years called People with Bodies, and we put out an EP in 2019 called The Staples in Roseville, California. And I think usually like journalists review bands' albums, but I think this episode we should review our own album.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so can you kind of talk about what the genesis behind the name was of the Staples in Roseville, California?
I would take a lot of Greyhound trips to San Francisco or the Bay Area, and Roseville is on the way there. And I never went in or like even got into like the parking lot, but it was just like a very captivating place to me. So I just had the idea, okay, Staples in Roseville, California, like has a very iconic sort of ring to it, so I just decided like I should do an EP of songs with just a place and a chain store of that place.
This song is called The Wendy's in Fernley, Nevada. Staples in Roseville, California is an 86-song EP by People with Bodies. That band was me, Emily, and Mark Nesbitt. I took Emily's idea to create an album of songs named after chain stores, and I ran with it. During a 4-day haze, house-sitting in the dead of winter, I coughed out 40 of these short electronic tracks. Inspired mostly by corporate space. Emily then joined me in my isolation, and we made a dozen or two more. Then at home, our roommates helped us reach 86. When we uploaded the songs, we used the genre tags Microwave and Commercial Dread. Like, we were exploring this idea of dread, like this feeling of dread that you feel when you walk into a Walmart in Kansas and it looks exactly like the Walmart in Reno, which looks exactly like the Walmart in Maine, which looks exactly, you know, they all are the same layout, the same feeling by design. And I just feel this intense dread every single time I walk into somewhere like that. It's just this like seed of a fear that I especially then did not understand at all, and I wanted to explore it.
Yeah, there's something like also just aesthetically attractive to me about like a parking lot of a place. And actually, like, I think it is a dread for sure, but there is a bizarre aesthetic pull towards it that made me want to make art out of it, you know, because I think if it's just something that's dreadful, you would want to maybe do escapist kind of art to sort of like maybe write, you know, a lot of our music is about like nature and other things that we like being in, you know, and so that's like the impetus of a lot of our creative life. But then we took this thing that like aesthetically kind of doesn't inspire us, but it kind of does in a weird way for me, and I don't know exactly why. And so that was more of my impulse to create, was to explore why these things were sort of aesthetically attractive to me.
The Waffle House in Hagerstown, Maryland. So the entire EP was made from stock sounds on Logic 7, like the default settings from the 2007 version of the GarageBand software. And using those preset sounds is usually a no-go in composition, you know, because they sound really cheesy and fake, but what I was finding was that they really matched the version of Dread that I get in a big box store, because in a weird way, they're also really comforting and recognizable. And then so many of the actual musical parts are really predictable and empty and mindless. So it wasn't a discordant Dread, but instead a very bright, shiny, major key, forced comfort thing, you know?
Yeah. Musically, I mean, there were a lot of discordant parts in the EP, actually, but I think they do kind of come a little bit from what you're talking about, where we just dumped major key things on top of each other, and when you stack them on top of each other and they're sort of clashing, that sort of creates its own sort of, I guess, discordant thing that goes on.
The JCPenney in Anchorage, Alaska. So I've been doing research into this, and the box store, basically the year that they say the box store started was 1962, or that was the watershed year is the word I kept seeing. Because Walmart and Kmart and a handful of others all opened up on in that year. And so at the time, it was really weird to walk into a store and see all of the merchandise. I think that is the impetus of that overwhelming feeling now, is that as all of these products grew, they were suddenly no longer just making packaging that you'll eventually get once you actually ask for the thing and it's given to you. They make packaging that's supposed to catch your eye. And when there's 100 cereal boxes in one aisle and every single one is trying to catch your eye, it's it just creates such a hum. I think that's what the music does. The drums are too loud and the synth is too loud and the bass is too loud. Everything is too loud and there's too much of it and it's all coming at you at once. The Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon.
The last of its kind. Many of the chain stores we named songs after have actually already gone out of business.
The fear is a weird feeling to feel there. I don't know if that's either what I feel. I think I just feel disappointment, and I feel afraid of the future of the world. It's more of I don't feel more of a visceral I'm not safe here, I guess, as much, maybe. I definitely just, it's more of a depressive, defeatist feeling that creeps over me, which I guess is kind of maybe there is a visceral element of that, because I, I mean, I struggle with sort of feelings like that of just like, oh, this is all hopeless, you know? And so that kind of like reaches into that part of me and really like wakes it up in a bad way.
It's such a existential feeling.
Yeah, it's more existential, I think, than fight or flight.
The Payless Shoes in Neillsville, Wisconsin.
I want to talk about Hellwalk.
Should we start from Fernley? Just like right here? Because that's where we went.
Okay, so the year was 2016, and at the time we were living together in my dad's basement, and I was working at a university job. What were you doing at the time? Do you know?
Oh, man. I think I was teaching.
And we were just starting People with Bodies, and we had this, like, inside joke going for a while where we would like struggle to figure out what to do. It's like, I don't know, we could go to the bar, or we could go to this restaurant, or we could go to this bar, or we could go to that show, or we could go to the movies or whatever. And then for whatever reason, we would always list, oh, or we could go to the Wendy's in Fernley. Like, that was just like the thing at the very bottom of the list. So it's like, okay, we have to choose one of these, you know? And like the Wendy's in Fernley was like
supposed to be a
deterrent, or so it was like
a way to jar a positive direction of where what we wanted to do.
And yet we ended up at the Wendy's in Fernley like several times,
including right now.
Yeah, exactly. And so one of those times in 2016, we were just like, let's go to the Wendy's in Fernley. And it's like a half an hour drive from Reno each way.
And especially at the time of night we were going, there's nothing to look at.
Yeah, you're driving on the freeway at night, and then you get to a Wendy's in a truck stop. And like, that's it, you know. And so we did that. We ate here, and then we're like, oh, we'll walk around Fernley. And so, and it was cold. I remember it was January or February. We went on a walk, and we walked down the main street, and it was cold, and there was nobody out, and it was just kind of uniquely depressing in this just kind of like dreary way. And I think both of us were feeling really intense, like depressive thoughts at the time of just like, what am I doing with my life? I got out of college and now I'm doing that. Like, now I'm in Fernley walking around, like living in my dad's basement with my friends, starting a band. Like, is this what I should be doing? Is this right? I think it is, but it just feels weird. It just felt like such a deep rut that both of us were in at the time. And we got here and we were walking down the street and we walked by this housing development that was like, just, it looked like it was put up in a week or two. For me, I was just like, just completely washed in this, just like my whole body just went numb. Like, it was just this feeling of like, this is where I'm going to end up. Like, I'm going to live in that duplex in Fernley, Nevada, if I keep down the path that I'm going on right now. And like, that was just such a physical feeling that it just like hit me in the gut. How do you remember that night?
One of us came up with the term hellwalk for it. I guess hell sort of it's hard to define what a hellwalk is without saying we walked and we looked at some chain stores, and chain stores are depressing because it wasn't really physical. Like you said, a lot is going on emotionally. So I think like a lot of what that has to do with for me is like default, the concept of like a default. So, I mean, like what we're talking about is just, like, if you're in town, in new town that you don't know and you go to Wendy's, it's because it's like that's sort of just like a default setting. Like you didn't challenge yourself to go anywhere else. And I think the same feeling of like getting out of college and just feeling like you could default at what you went to college for, which for you at the time was working at the college that you went to college.
Exactly.
It was just like a scary thing for you where you were just like, this is a good job, I guess. But what am like, why am I doing it? Do I want to do it? So just like a lot of that to me has to do with like default and teaching, even for me, because my mom was a teacher. My great grandma was a teacher. Then like there's like a sort of a tradition of that, I guess. And then, you know, I'll just do that because it seems like what I should be doing, I guess. It's totally illogical that you felt that you were going to end up in an apartment in Fernley, but in the same way, it actually kind of does make sense because you're thinking, like, how does anyone get there?
Totally.
By defaulting, yeah. I think.
The KFC in Danville, Kentucky.
As time went on, the Hell Walk sort of became this tool that both of us would use to kind of fight depression. I need to go on some sort of journey that's doable right now that will knock me out of my shit. You know, that'll knock me out of this space. And I would do it. I ended up doing it quite a bit. I'd go on like a 7 or 8 mile hike, usually at night, through the city, walking just like specifically to, in Reno, Kitski, which is car lot after Carl's Jr., after car lot, after Arby's, after, you know, all of those chain store places all the way down. And I'd walk as far as I could until I got too tired, and then I'd turn around and walk straight back.
This hell walk technique that we both sort of like have practiced, I don't know if it works. I don't know. Does it work for you?
I don't know either.
But it's sort of just this like impulse, actually, really.
Yeah.
That I need to try anything, you know? And it's sort of just like a throw it all at the wall and see what sticks. So, I mean, I had a similar thing that didn't include a hell walk, but it was a similar process where I was having a panic attack and I called my therapist and I was like, can we talk right now? I need like sort of like an emergency session. And she was like, totally, can you wait 30 minutes? Cause like, I'm, you know, she was busy with something, but can you wait 30 minutes? And I was like, yeah, like I kind of tried to like settle myself and be like, yeah, I can do 30 minutes. But you know, 30 minutes is a long time when you're freaking out like that. So I like put on Captain Beefheart Trout Mask Replica, which is one of my favorite albums, but also really helped me sort of overwhelm myself. And then I was reading this book that a friend of ours gave us by Genesis P. Orridge, where she just writes in this very idiosyncratic way. So I like read that out loud and listened to this album. It was just like this way of trying to just shake the thing out and move it out of me. And it sort of worked. I mean, it kept me at bay for the 30 minutes. And Captain Beefheart is actually one who said, you know, he made the music that he made to sort of break people out of like a hypnosis.
Take my hand and come with me. It's not too late for you if it's not too late for me to find my home.
Which that he thought like rock and roll had gotten people into, which is like a 4/4 beat, which feels very reliable to the human ear. And so he made the kind of music he did to sort of shake people out of that without him being like a conscious influence on the Staples in Roseville. I kind of think that's like maybe what we were trying to do, is just put everything on there to just sort of shake something out of the dread that we're feeling about corporate space just invading everywhere that we knew, you know? We just like needed to just attack it with every sound that we could find in a way.
Rainforest Cafe in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Defunct.
We'll be back after a quick visit to the Anytime Fitness in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Stay with us. where my brain goes, I think instinctually, is to try to go positive in a way where it's like, oh, well, they're going to die. Like, the Best Buy is going to go out of business for sure in the next 10, 20 years. Like, there will be no more Best Buys. And then we'll have these cool, huge buildings to do something with. You know, like, we've had this talk before of, like, all of the weird stuff you could do in an abandoned Kmart.
We sort of thought of, like, what would this place have been like in maybe hunter-gatherer times. And so we thought of making it into, like, a park.
Like a theme park.
A theme park where you could experience hunter-gatherer life and release some wild animals and just lock them in there. People would pay you money to get in there and just, like, it's really hard. And there's, like, a couple of rabbits in there. And they have to find the rabbits and eat them. And, like, there's, like a little bit of water, and some of it's, like, really bad and you could make you really sick. And just lock them in there indefinitely.
In, an abandoned super Walmart.
And in an abandoned Walmart or abandoned whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's just, like, it's such a fun thing to brainstorm, too.
There's the famous library that was in the Walmart and all that stuff.
Yeah, in McAllen, Texas. Like, it's, like, this huge... Something great just happened in the Wendy's kitchen, and I don't know what.
Unexpected moment of beauty. Behind the plexiglass, the Wendy's employees embrace.
Yeah, so there's, like, that library in Texas that's, like, a massive library. There's a handful of places that it looks like people have turned it into, like, housing stuff. A handful of places that have basically turned them into indoor malls, but, like, trendy indoor malls. But there's no hunter-gatherer cosplay store, you know? Like, there's none of, like, there. I haven't been able, maybe there is, but I haven't been able to find something of that magnitude yet. And I was trying to figure out why, and I started thinking about this same story that's happening in Reno right now, where there's an old Lowe's that is being converted into a new spot. And... so it's, like, basically this developer took over the Lowe's. They gave half of it to an artist's program, The Generator. So they took half of it, and they're turning it into a distillery, brewery, a handful of, like, local shops, I think, and then a, like, startup space where they have, like, work collective kind of open space for workers and freelance workers. So me and Eleanor Tulloch, one of the other contributors to The Wind, went to this place. It's called the Adi District in the old abandoned Lowe's. And we talked to two of the people who are involved in specifically The Generator and the art collective on, like, what used to be the lumber yard of Lowe's.
So my name is Alicia Dynamic, and I'm the education manager for the Reno Generator.
I'm Jessie Sprackett. I'm the communications director at The Generator, and we are in The Generator makerspace on Adi Boulevard. We are a community makerspace, an art space, where we host programming for kids and adults, as well as, like, members can sign up, and then it's basically like an art gym.
And so can you talk about some of the specific stuff The Generator builds, like, in addition to doing community workshop stuff?
Sure. We started out as kind of a Burning Man art space, and we've done a bunch of large-scale Burning Man projects, including Embrace and the Space Whale, Bebot, the Dancing Bees.
Two temples.
Two different temples, yep. Galaxia, Bobby Yaga's House, The Great Train Wreck, a lot of really large art.
Yeah,
lots and lots of art, big art projects.
As these places kind of fail and move and
go online, they're leaving these big carcasses. And I'm wondering, like, is this, do you think this is the answer to that kind of thing? Is this one of the answers? Is this replicable at all? Is this just going to work here? Do you think, you know?
I want to believe that it could happen in more places. I think large-scale community art spaces are desperately needed. Like, just community spaces are things we need much more than boxers, right? But the problem is, we wouldn't be in here if it wasn't for the fact that the developers wanted to have an arts collective. They wanted somebody local to, like, bring legitimacy, I think, to their project. And so we got a really good deal. And they're burners, right? So I don't know how many other box stores it would just work out, you know? Because this costs a lot of money. Just heating this building is 10 G's a month.
Wow.
So, right? Crazy. Like, yeah. How the hell is your small art collective gonna even pay for that?
Yeah.
So this section right here, this long section, is called Area 15. And it's our event space and also our big project space. Alicia's husband is an artist here, and he's doing a giant train.
He's building a life-size locomotive, like a steam locomotive-style train, and it's going to be mounted vertically, like as if it was, like, falling from the sky and crashing, like, headfirst into the pavement.
Yeah, so. I mean, this is big enough to, like... It's big enough to build a train inside of.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a very big project. But yeah, we could build something much bigger in here. But that's the thing that we keep finding ourselves now as an organization, sort of like weighing how we're going to organize the space, like what is best for our artists and our community and the legacy that we have as an organization.
A symbol of American industrial expansion, dropped from the sky, landing headfirst in a wide, unrolling plain of polished cement.
Yeah, originally they wanted this to be live workspaces, which we were super excited about because we were like talking about getting subsidized spaces for our artists, and they're like, oh, maybe this can be an affordable way for us to, you know, fight gentrification and have our people have a place to live. But it was just so difficult for them to rezone this to be a live work that they just tossed that whole idea of a live space.
Gotcha.
And that's even this huge company, right, that has a lot of sway in Reno. They're doing a lot of big projects here, you know. And they're struggling to fight against that. Like, imagine a building like this where you turned it into an art space like what we're doing, but then there's apartments all around, like these big open spaces. Like, could you imagine all these apartments with like open into this like courtyard mezzanine space and like plants and garden and, you know, like outside having
park.
Food gardens and like having the art park and having, ugh, I wish.
Yeah, I mean, it's like building a whole new little city, like in these places, because they're set up for something totally different, but bizarrely also kind of perfectly set up for that.
Yeah.
Like a walled city or something.
Yeah, if only our local laws and regulations were specifically sort of designed to keep us from doing those sorts of things.
Yeah.
they were basically said, like, well, it costs $10,000 a month to heat this room. Like, $10,000 a month to heat this place. And that made me realize, like, oh, we're never going to be able to do, like, we can't get $10,000 a month for a hunter-gatherer.
Well, $10,000 and then the rent.
And then the rent. Yeah, exactly. Like, we can't. That's not going
to
happen.
But you wouldn't have to heat the hunter-gatherer setting. That's actually that's where you save some money.
So to answer your question from earlier of do hell walks work, that specific one in Fernley, I think that's kind of become personal lore because it specifically did work. We did that walk and I struggled for like 2 or 3 weeks at home, and then I decided I was going to quit my job. And I did. Like, I went to my boss, who was my friend, you know, who had like
totally hooked it up, getting me this job. I can't do this anymore, man. Like, I have to go live. Like, I can't continue working in a windowless closet at the college that I graduated from. It was like a thing that actually, like, it directly led me to a huge life decision, you know, and I think set me down the path that I've been on for the last 6 years.
No, and I mean, we were walking through the woods earlier where you have your now office. So you had that office, which is a closet.
Yeah.
And now you have this office that some of your listeners, I'm sure, will know is in the forest. It's just in the forest on a mountain. And the reason you got to that forest is because you just kind of like walked through the woods and found it, basically. And then what I was noticing on our way back was that there was just a trail there. And I was like, wait, this trail leads exactly to it. Like, did you make in? Yeah, you had made it. Which kind of leads me to the idea of like the desire path, which is like a lot of animals, you know, if they need to like access a water source or something, like you'll notice it'll just be like a deer will create desire paths, people will create desire paths and stuff like that. Or it's just like that's, you'll just kind of literally make, it was cool to see that you had manifested this literal trail through the woods by just wanting to go there a lot. It's just such a literal manifestation of like what a lot of people do or don't do in life, which is like the overwhelming idea of like having to recreate your entire life. It's just too scary for a lot of people, including me. And
including
sure
me,
you.
Yeah, everyone. Absolutely, yeah.
So I think most people do anything not to have to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with why we create comfortable spaces for ourselves to kind of inhabit together, you know?
The proclivity toward comfort creates a lucrative market, a commodified interpretation of safety, ever-present, with the lights always on. It is not us who will take down and replace the box store. That is the task of a bigger capitalist monster. Maybe the only thing we can do is to play MIDI saxophone as they burn. To feel comfort and dread simultaneously, and maybe to drive to that part of town, park our car, and go for a long, long walk. Would you recommend a hell walk?
I would say try it. I definitely think it's a way to shake something up and see what happens with it.
Well, I think that's it. Is there anything you'd want to add?
Well, you had a Frosty, so maybe I'll get one too. You'll probably have a Frosty. Okay.
Is produced by me, Phil Corbett. Co-produced this week by Emily Pratt and help from Eleanor Tulloch. Thanks to Jesse and Alicia for the tour of the generator, and thanks to Lucas Starmer, who helped make the virtual reality version of this EP. There was a Captain Beefheart song in there, but the rest were all by People with Bodies from the EP The Staples in Roseville, California. If you want to hear all 86 songs, they're available as a virtual reality YouTube playlist or as a map. Links at thewind.org. And of course, if you like the show, make sure to subscribe, leave a review, or share an episode with a friend. Thank you for being here, and keep listening.
See you later.